everyone. This is Matt,
and welcome to another episode of Takeout with Ashley Coffardy and Robin O'Brien, discussing better, not perfect nutrition and the new food economy. Who's up for a food awakening? Today, we're lucky to have Dr. Lisa Price, ND, on the show. Dr. Lisa Price is a licensed naturopathic physician with expertise in complementary cancer care and culinary nutrition during cancer treatment through survivorship. She guides patients in finding the best foods and supplementation that reduce short and long-term side effects, as well as advising which supplements and foods to avoid. She is also an author, radio host, lecturer, and has published peer-reviewed scientific papers and abstracts, written many articles on health and nutrition, and has presented her findings at scientific conferences. For over a decade, Dr. Price has actively served cancer patients and teamed with oncologists in cancer centers. And we are extremely lucky to have her on the show. Can't wait to hear what she has to say. Extremely important topic, obviously. Food, nutrition, supplements, extremely important. So let's get right to it. Over to you, ladies.
Welcome, everyone. I am always so excited, Robin, to be able to grab Takeout with you. Every conversation, we always talk about it. I learn something, and for some reason also, like, they happen exactly on the day and the time that they're meant to. And I've got this huge smile on my face. We were just chatting with our guest, and I'll leave it up to you, Robin, whether or not you want to describe the scenario in which we're connecting with you. But you know, this world, I mean, there's just nothing crazier in my mind than 2020, you know, this everything that's going on. And it actually has been struggles, I would say, on certain days to actually get that smile on my face and to have that laughter. And I really wouldn't have ever thought that the topic that we're going to discuss today would start off with such a smile and this positive energy, but I'm just so filled with hope. So I'm so excited to actually have this conversation. Before we dive into that, and I will have you catch up with you in a second, I do want to acknowledge that today's session is sponsored in part by my company, the Better Nutrition Program, the all-in-one system to help practitioners grow their business, and also by Fullscript, which is one of my favorite tools. It's a virtual dispensary and so much more that helps integrative practitioners like myself have the best information, the best quality supplements, and be able to share that information and deliver it seamlessly, especially in a COVID environment with our patients. So thank you to both of those companies. And Robin, how the heck are you?
I'm good, but I'm so excited about the conversation today. And I also think what continues to emerge is this really deep intuition and wisdom. And clearly, when we connect with other people that share that capacity, it's just this instant synergy. And you automatically, immediately, always end up knowing somebody and connecting, already knowing somebody. And I love stuff like that. But I think it's because you and I tend to catch these incredible pioneers, these incredible thought leaders in their different industries. And I think it's what makes it so much fun for me to do the podcast with you, Ashley, is that it's that exchange of like teacher student, like we get to host these and teach our listeners, you know, given these extraordinary guests. But at the same time, you and I get to sit here and be students and listen and learn to these incredible people that we have on. And that's why I love doing this with you. And I'm super excited about the conversation today.
Ditto so much. And of course, you and Lisa already have connections. Like it was just, as you said, it was just meant to be. So Dr. Lisa Price, who, as I've gotten to dive into her bio, and we share the bio with all of you, so I'm not going to take any of our extra time to go over that. I have immediately such a, and I say this, both a professional and a personal girl crush, like all the things that I'm such a geek, and I love to study medicinal mushrooms. And you've gone and researched that, and then even further back. I wish I, when I was younger, had done something like you did with the Peace Corps and this whole space of environmental justice. So, Lisa, we are so excited to have you here today to have a conversation that was really initiated around trying to not just talk about something that so many of us know to be an issue, and that is the lack of Black, so we use that BIPOC, the lack of people of color representation in healthcare, and very specifically in certain parts of healthcare. We wanted to talk about that, not to just state that and have that awareness, but really start to unpack why it is so as a way to be able to start to create the change and understand how we all have to be brave and be intentional in shifting that. So we brought you here for that conversation, and I want to have that conversation, but I also want to start with, gosh, how the heck did you get on the path to doing what you were doing? So maybe we could start off with when you were a little girl, Lisa, what did you think that you were going to grow up and be doing, or what were your dreams at that point?
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm honored to be here. So thank you. So that's an interesting question. When I was a kid, I had a great affinities towards animals. I thought that, or I clicked with animals. I thought that they had a lot more compassion than people did. but another thing that happened, so I grew up in primarily on the East Coast in Washington, D.C., in New York, mainly in Brooklyn, New York. And there was an interesting phenomena that happened to myself and my brother. We would we seemingly ended up defending a lot of people, underdogs, even when we were children. One of the stories from when I was about 5 years old was we were living in upstate New York at the time, and a little boy our age, his name was Ubby, and Ubby was being called names. And so I remember going into the house and asking my mother, what is being Jewish mean? And she said, well, you know, it's a religion and it's a culture. And I said, well, why is it something to be made fun of, or to be called names by? And she tried to explain, and both my brother and I thought it was absurd. And so we formed a little gang. And so that's, you know, that's one of the stories, and it goes on. We formed a little gang with Tony, who was an Italian boy who was, you know, also being picked on or bullied. So I think justice, social justice, has always been something that has been big in my family and for myself as well. But as I said, as I thought I was going to be become a veterinarian. My father was in the Air Force, and that's why we moved around a bit on the East Coast, and then finally ended up in Anchorage, Alaska, when I was just going into high school. And there is where I developed my love of and fascination for and passion for the environment. I was a part of a program called Youth Conservation Corps. And youth, youth that was in trouble or anything like that, but youth that decided that they wanted to become part of these summer programs and go into the wilderness, build trails and salmon ladders, and learn about herbs and plants, etc. It was a summer long program for teens. And at that time is when one of the leaders, who was an adult, that I met, was, her name was Glenna Wild. And Glenna was, one of the people that taught us about herbs and then how to make food from things that you foraged in the forest. And, she later on became a naturopath, and I had no idea that she had become a naturopath. And, you know, small world of worlds, she was coming out of Bastyr one day as I was going in to apply. And we ran into each other and we couldn't believe it. So, you know, there was that. And then also in college, I was an activist, and I'm going to date myself. I worked on the divestment campaign. So divestment from South Africa and, protesting apartheid, and as well as protests with regards to nuclear power plants and the devastation they caused to the environment. So that's a little choppy background of who I am, but, you know, very much I am have interest in the health and well-being of the planet and health and well-being of people as well.
Okay, so that is a huge, amazing, impressive bio, especially for someone so young. You know, I think I say this as a mother of four and two of the kids are college age. That can be a really selfish time. And clearly you were incredibly aware and engaged at a really young age. So it makes sense, you know, that now to see kind of this force that you are for health and wellness. You know, and clearly COVID has brought a lot to light. You know, people will say, oh, it's exposed that we have a broken food system. And as somebody from the finance side of things, you know, it's not actually broken. It was actually designed to be this extractive so that certain participants were extraordinarily profitable in the process. And once you actually look at it that way, then you can actually go about, you know, solving for the crisis. But, you know, one of the things that is emerging is the discrimination across the food system, whether we're talking about farm workers out in the field, you know, berries, or we're talking about the factory workers who are dealing with these horrific conditions in the meatpacking plants. And I'm wondering, you know, as you kind of speak to these issues, as you work with your clients and your patients on these issues, is there a universal truth? Is there something that you can share that people, regardless of where they are, what their backgrounds are, that is something that they can do to really kind of take that first step to really begin to protect their health? And I think for a lot of people, it's like, oh my gosh, it's so overwhelming. There's so much. I don't know where to start. And that can be, that tsunami of emotion can be really paralyzing. When somebody's in that place, what would you recommend as the first place to start?
I think what I would say is, and I think the statement, you have to unpack it, because while it's simple, it's also complex. And that's what we are, right? That's what the world is. That's what we are as individuals, very complex. I would say seek agency. And seeking agency means finding core values within yourself. And they can be very simple. They can be, I'm grateful. You know, we talk a lot about gratitude, but I am grateful for getting up today, and I'm grateful for my dogs, or, you know, finding those things that ring true to you and that are steady. Develop a schedule, and the schedule should center on yourself. And that sounds very selfish, but I think that is we also need to unpack the word selfish and what that means, and who has actually given us the definition of what selfish means, because I think it's been used against especially women. So it's a sexist definition to not take care of ourselves and to not pay attention to ourselves. Paying attention to ourselves is the first step in self-care is the first step in developing health and wellness. And we have to do that sustainably. And when we develop sustained health and well-being, then we're able to help others around us. But I think, again, I just want to reiterate what I just said and clarify, is that developing a schedule, and the schedule needs to center around yourself. And that schedule needs to also contain the foundations of health, which is exercise, some type of mindfulness, and also eating in a way that is sustainable. And that's going to be different. It's going to look different for everyone, depending on where they are. But it can also be, you know, if you're in a food desert, for example, or you don't have resources to buy food that seems, you know, of nutritional value, then our thoughts can turn to urban farming or a backyard pot farming. And that sounds complex, but it's not that complex. And we can even see that it can be economical. It just takes time and planning, but that's all part of this. Is nothing comes overnight, right? Even forming and sticking to schedules doesn't happen overnight. And that, I believe, we have to give ourselves some grace with regards to that, and understanding that, yes, it's going to take steps and steps. There's a saying, a French saying that is said in West Africa, petit à petit l'oiseau fait son nid, which is little by little the bird builds its nest. And I think in the time of COVID, we have to kind of fall back on this saying, is that slowly and slowly with grace, we build our nest, and our nest should be around us, not other people.
I love the slowly, that expression is phenomenal. And that notion of bringing, you know, who we bring around us and also how we can help our patients be successful is often so disrupted by the fact that in healthcare, so often the people that need the help are not finding individual practitioners that look like them and that have had the experiences, the life experiences. And, you know, I think social media for me has brought it to such a head over the last 5 years, just seeing the answers that, you know, just the sharing of information of what people should be, what you should do, and the, this is, you know, the mass recommendations, right? The lack of personalization. Mm-hmm. And I want to shift the conversation to racism in healthcare, that systemic racism, because especially as we can talk about during COVID, and it, obviously with where you live in the Seattle area, you guys were dealing with it with it first, and very at a time when we knew almost nothing about it. What we are seeing in terms of who is dying, what we are seeing also in terms of who are risking their lives every day to care for individuals, is really highlighting to me also, you know, that our system, very much like what Robin was saying about the food system, our system that I thought maybe historically was just disadvantageous unintentionally to people of color was actually structured in a certain way against people of color. So mm-hmm. you sort of leapt into, I arrived at Bastyr, and I'd like to have the conversation about what is keeping more people of color from finding the medical profession and being embraced within the medical profession as it would differ from, say a white person.
Yeah. So I want to just start out with some statistics for people that are listening. And then some lack of information, and then we could launch into that. So let's just talk about conventional physicians, the numbers here, and these stats are from 2018. So the 56.2% of current physicians are white, 5% are black, and the U.S. African American population is 15%. Asian population of physicians is 17.1%. And 5.8 are Latinx, or also known as Hispanic. So right there, we see that that there is a disparity as far as if we're just talking about African Americans, but we also can talk about BIPOC people too. Is that there's a great disparity in the number of or the percentage as of Black physicians as compared to the U.S. population of African American people. And, you know, sometimes people might say, well, so what, you know, what's the big deal on that with that? Well, there's a huge big deal. What we know now is that there's huge disparities in the type of healthcare people are delivered when it is given by someone of the not the same race. And we've got more and more studies that are coming out. And in fact, the University of Washington has recognized this and now has implemented. I'm not exactly sure what the department is, but it's headed by two brilliant women, Dr. Patricia Dawson and also Paula Houston. And they are looking at how to actually, not to talk about anymore, but actually how to undo systemic racism And it starts from the top, and it starts with from the administrators, and they are fully on board, and all doctors have to be involved in this program. And so I'm hoping that these kind of programs in other medical schools start to take hold, because it's very important. And not only is it important from the fact that there is a disparity in healthcare workers that are BIPOC folks, but also in administration. Because if you don't see the issue, or if you don't see the problem, then you're never going to address it, right? I have a friend, just recently, I have been taking this creative playwriting class, and it's with African-American women. And at the end of the first session of classes, we opened it up to the public, and you know, so it was a public reading on Zoom. Everybody was safe, COVID safe, and one of my friends who was attending is a white woman, and her comment. There were several comments about one of the pieces. Because the writer set up an internalized oppression, internalized racism dialogue between two people. And so there was a lot of discussion of how she set that up. And it was very well done and subtle. And my friend said, "Oh, man, I was just listening to that thinking that the woman was being resilient and she was just taken up for herself. I never saw that it was, internalized racism or internalized oppression that was happening there." And this is the problem, is if your world is, if you're looking through a visor that belongs to you, but doesn't belong to someone else who's experiencing these things. And this is the insidiousness of institutionalized racism. It's not set up for white folks to see it. And so there can be doubt and denial, but it hurts everybody, right? It hurts everybody. It hurts your patients. It hurts your employees. It hurts your institution in the end. And when we're talking about economics, it begins to hurt economically as well. So I also wanted just to note some issues within the naturopathic world. There's 6,000 licensed naturopaths. We're licensed in 23 states and regions in the country. We do not have statistics on how many BIPOC people are naturopathic doctors. So again, this is an issue. We need to keep records of trends, and we need to keep those records because of we make an oath to do no harm, and when we are not serving everyone or serving everyone in a unbiased way, we do harm. In addition, again, if we talk about economics and finance, when we are not talking about equity and practicing equity, it does affect economics and finances, not just on an institutional level. For example, any of the naturopathic schools like Bastyr or Southwest or National, but it also affects our businesses. The people that come to our businesses and patronize, and also as far as advertisement. So that's what I have to say about that.
Time for a quick ad from Ashley Koff RD.
I'm just loving this conversation with Dr. Lisa Price, and I wanted to take a moment to share with you one of the tools that I use in my practice makes such a difference for me and my patients, and also that I use for my colleagues in their practices, and that's Fullscript, one of our sponsors today, which is the ultimate platform for those practitioners that want to do wellness the right way, the personalized way. You know, FullScript has the industry's most comprehensive catalog, over 300 professional quality products, making safe supplements more accessible and affordable and making personalized treatment plans possible. It helps us. It's even beyond just a virtual dispensary. It's got features like EHR integrations, patient refill reminders, customizable dosage instructions, and an evidence-based protocol library for practitioners, as well as educational content for patients. So I love this. I find it an incredible resource. If you're interested in learning more, you can head to fullscript.com. I'm also going to share a link so that if you're interested in getting your free, fully stocked, fully loaded with my recommendations store to be ready to use in your practice, you can go ahead and sign up for that today.
Right, let's get back to the podcast.
You know, as I listen to you, and I spent so much time listening, and one of the most powerful statements I heard from a friend, she said, when you talk about diversity, inclusion, diversity from what? Inclusion to what? Those terms, by their use, are white-centered. And I was like, wow, that is so incredibly on the money. And as we talk about justice issues, you know, whether we're talking about food justice, environmental justice, climate justice, racial justice, those all have that same intersection, you know, of justice. And I think we do tend to, and you see it in healthcare just across the board, this kind of don't ask, don't tell attitude. But it's shocking really to me that there's 6,000 naturopaths and you don't have a sense for what your client base looks like. And I think about, that's just, I mean, to be totally candid, poor mismanagement of an industry, because you would want to understand your client base. You would want to understand the opportunities. And yes, economics absolutely impact this. You know, one of the challenges the food industry sees right now is natural and organic hasn't grown in demographics really much beyond just this kind of traditional white consumer. It's a very white industry. It's got really white leadership, you know? And as I was seeing different groups propose solutions, you know, it had nothing to do with tackling the economic injustice. It was just how do we sell these demographics? And I thought, you know, again, this is so predatory. So really, at its heart is the economic injustice. I hear it coming through what you're saying. And how can we, and is it policy, you know, where is it? How can we help tackle that economic injustice as it relates to healthcare and the systems?
So I'll take an example of at one of the schools, and I guess I shouldn't name anyone because I don't want to get anybody in trouble. But one of the schools I guess I outed myself already because I'm going to say one of the schools that I worked at. So I was an adjunct professor of faculty at Bastyr University, and from 2003 to 2015, and I would go and I would look at the board on the faculty lounge area, and the whole board except say for one person for faculty was white. And then the one faculty retired because she had been there for a long time, and she retired, and they replaced her by a white person. When inquiring about, you know, why is this, they said, well, you know, we haven't found anyone who is, this is what I was told. We haven't found anyone that meets our needs who's a person of color. And we need to continue talking about diversity. And so, but the talk about diversity has spanned for about 25 years, because it's not, you know, even when I was there, I pushed as well as other students who had been there and that were currently there and had were there after me as well. So I think if we look at that, we can kind of try to destructure things, right? So there are people of color that are prepared, ready, and are fully capable of doing those jobs. It is a bit of a conundrum for folks to say that there isn't a correct person to be put in those things. I think institutions get wrapped up into a culture that is fed by systemic racism and also sexism as well, and they can't get out of it. And it starts from, you know, it starts from the beginnings of the institution. Who developed the institution? Who stayed there? What are their attitudes? And so so the question that you've asked me, well, what does it take to start to dismantle that and to change it? And I think, you know, before I would have said, well, I think it will take, you know, talking and planning, but now I don't think so anymore. I think that it's going to have to take people leaving the institution and creating a whole new culture. And I think that even maybe when I'm thinking about it, that we're going to have to look, or the institution needs to look at this from a whole different paradigm. So there's got to be a paradigm shift, and maybe looking at this from an economic standpoint, a new economic standpoint and a new economic model will be able to change their thoughts, just like the University of Washington did. But right now, a lot of our India institutions, I think, are running on old models, and they also have very old thinking that is steeped with institutionalized racism and sexism. And I think they're failing our students. I think they're failing our patients as well.
Oh, I just want to echo so much of what you were saying. I just had a similar experience. I was asked to chair a board, a science board for a company in a corporate setting, working where the company wanted, you know, endeavor to sell and create products that deliver to help support families across America. And, you know, it was for, thankfully there were two women and two men that they brought. So I was okay. Like, at least we're not dealing, you know, theoretically not dealing with the sexism side of things. But it was all white people. And I just stopped. I was like, not only will I not chair, you know, I can't be on this board. And, one of the things that I want to acknowledge right now that I know that we have to do to change, and in a little way, apologize also to you, Dr. Price, for, doing what is not what I'm learning is not what we can do. We don't turn to the person of color and say, how do we change this? The change has to start with white people. And so it has to start with someone like myself when they literally said to me, well, we are looking for that person and we'd love to, you know, we want to get the board launched, but we of course want, you know, to be diverse and have people of color. I'm like, no, you don't understand. You can't have a board that works, that reaches American families today if you don't. You know, if we look at what the numbers should be, it shouldn't be for people all over the age of 60. I was fortunately bringing down the average age a little bit, but, you know, and their point was they couldn't find someone. And I'm like, you can literally Google black physician and like a black pediatrician, which is what I did, you know, just as an exercise or ask others. So one of the things that you're bringing up, and to our listeners, I want to recognize we invited Lisa here today because, and I do still want to hear a little bit more about your story to have this conversation, but we can't be asking you to solve the problems that we've created. So it does have to start from white people saying, hey, I actually am not going to be good at my job if there isn't a black person here. Or in the case of naturopaths, like, especially when we look at, you know, the cultures of, you know, traditional Chinese medicine and Indian, you know, I mean, like Ayurveda, et cetera, that like, we have to have people of color come in because these are their heritage. And, you know, I mean, there's so much like diversity, to use the word that I'm probably not supposed to use, but, you know, we just need so much diversity of thought and opinion coming into that part. So I want to recognize that we're not asking, we recognize we need to solve it, but I wanted to have the conversation with you around the medicine side because it's not something I'm in all the time. So I appreciate as you're talking about the administration piece, et cetera.
Can I jump in?
Yeah, actually,
you know, the other thing you said, Lisa, that I have heard over and over and over again with the food industry is we don't have enough of those candidates. You know, we just don't. And again, it's like, then you need to be, as white people, need to be braver in the conversation and braver in the outreach and really, you know, get way out of your comfort zone so that you are meeting new and being informed by this wisdom and this expertise and this insight that we don't have, you know? So I think, you know, what I've seen in the food industry is there's just, it's like a bunch of little kids that are just afraid. You know, they don't know what they don't know. They don't know what to do. And so they just kind of stand there completely paralyzed and totally afraid. And I'm with you 100%, Ashley. It's what can we do? And how do we get through this level of fear that can be so psychological? Because A, we know we've caused incredible pain. We know we've caused harm. We know there's been incredible injustice. And I think for some of my white friends, what I see is they don't know how to clear that hurdle. And that is our work. That's our work. You know, you got to clear that hurdle so that you can sit down and say, I'm terrible at this. I don't have these people in my network and shame on me. And this is the work I have to do so that I grow and we grow and the expansiveness that we need is there. So yeah, I'm with you 100% on that. And I think it's sort of like, there's no time for victim mode. It's like, you've really got to move through this as a society and as human beings, you know, to really tackle how systemic it is.
Lisa, how did you, you're so accomplished. It's both Rob and I are just like, oh my God, like every, you know, I said, I just keep looking at what you've done. How do you consistently get yourself in a space that is literally a system that is literally built to, first of all, support white men, but then second of all, so as a woman, like as a black woman, we're like, whoa, you know, like they're stepping in. Like, what are some of the things that you felt or even thinking back, or if you have examples about how you navigated certain systems and situations to be successful in, whether it's getting research funding or whether it's getting some of the positions that you currently have?
Yeah, so I when I went off to a school, you know, I started undergraduate school, but I went to an upper division school, as SUNY ESF, and it was an environmental college, so environmental science and forestry college, but I went to study environmental science, but with a focus in biochemistry and microbiology. And so I also went off to do grad work there. And it was interesting because I let my passion drive me. And, and I do have to say too, is that I come from, a family of, so I'm from Brooklyn. That's where my family nexus is. And I come from a family of mostly of men who were intellectuals and scientists and journalists and my grandmother didn't let us play outside with the kids who were opening up the fire hydrants, even though we really wanted to go out there and play, but we didn't get to do that. And so we had to, you know, at the time, people don't even know what this is, but we bust open the encyclopedias and read about really interesting things, et cetera. So my world was a little bit, I was a little naive to what I could and couldn't do, I think, because of my family background. And so when I went into SUNY ESF in graduate school, I didn't know that I wasn't supposed to do that, you know, by standards of society. And in fact, when I was protesting a divestment or apartheid in our school's investment in South Africa, I went to talk to the chancellor one day, Syracuse University chancellor one day, and asked him about inequities even on our campus and why so many of the Black students were ushered into business and accounting rather than into the hard sciences. And he said, he said to me, there's some things that people just can't do. Certain people can't do. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, the hard sciences are not something that many Black people have aptitude for. And I said, you're kidding. I said, I'm a biochemist. And he said, well, you're an exception. And so this is the mentality that I didn't know existed. And I think if I knew it existed, then it would have affected me. So I think there was some naivety on my part in going through the system. So I was one of the only African-American women at the time on my campus. There were African women, but there were not African American. And so I just thought again, oh, okay, I'm just doing what I'm doing. I'm passionate about it. I'm doing what I'm doing. And with regards to further professional, I just ran into some really great people that were also passionate about what they were doing and hired me, right off the bat after I got out of grad school for my first professional jobs and worked with them on new grants. And as far as the National Institute of Health Research Fellowship, the reason why I was awarded that grant, other than the fact that I was, I was a research scientist and other than the reason why I was fully capable and competent to be hired was because of another person of color. Dr. Sivam was my advocate and she was my champion. And I was, that's the reason why I got that grant. She'd advocated for me and I did great on that with that grant, in fact, and then, wrote another one and that one was successful as well. So I think part of it was naivety. Part of it was having champions, just like everybody else, champions in the field. And then just continuing to push and to believe in what I deserve, because of my capabilities and my experience.
Lisa, I could listen to you for hours. And I think back to, one of the most important things anybody can be doing is learn how to take care of themselves and mm-hmm. to unhinge that practice from the word selfish. Mm-hmm. It's something I have relayed to countless friends as they stepped into motherhood, is that the most important thing you can do is take care of yourself, and then you'll be able to take better care of your children. Mm-hmm. It's that whole, put on your oxygen mask first before helping others. It's so true. But as we pivot now to this series of short, quick answer questions that we wrap every interview with, I'm going to start with one, and I'm really curious what your answer is going to be. What is the greatest obstacle that you've overcome?
Okay, two really quickly. Writing a National Cancer Institute grant, that was huge. And then making it out of Senegal, West Africa, with only $10 in my pocket.
Wow. That's amazing to have those two answers in the same sentence. Oh my gosh, I just don't even know where to go with that.
We have to hear the Senegal story. I know we shouldn't go longer, but just give me some bits and pieces on that part. How old were you? What was going on? $10? Are you kidding?
I know. It's fools and babies. I was visiting a friend in Senegal. Well, I was visiting a friend in West Africa. He was in Mali in the Peace Corps. I wasn't in the Peace Corps at this time, so I must have been maybe 24 about 24, and he was just about to get out. And so we were going over there to visit him, and there were three of us. And so I was staying the longest period of time, and he had to do some other things. And so we all were together for a while, and then we all separated. And so, you know, I found myself in Senegal for a couple of days. I spent my money. I stayed in with the Peace Corps hostel for a couple of days, but then I had to make it out to the airport on the public bus, and there's some stupidity that was involved in that, but let's just say that's what happened, and I made it out.
Okay, so now we're pivoting to the next question, which clearly the depth of your experience, it just, I don't know how one person has packed so many lifetimes into this one lifetime, but what is the greatest opportunity that you see in this movement, specifically as it relates to health?
I think this is a great opportunity for the naturopathic schools to get their act together and transition from the 25 years of talking to actually to move to action and to mimic what University of Washington and some of the other great medical schools in this country are doing by hiring and looking at hiring practices from the top down. So I'm really hoping, I know that the American Association of Naturopathic Physicians has started to work on this project, but I'm hoping that the paradigm, as I said before, shifts from talking to real deep action that's going to affect the systemic racism and inequities that have developed because of this.
Yes, and just a nod to them. We are watching, so we will be watching and noting. I have two very close colleagues who are naturopaths in Columbus. You know, we're not as a state. That's a whole other story. But both people of color, and both are very keen on this. So I also think the younger generation, Lisa, of your colleagues, is very much going to help hold your profession accountable to this. So I'm excited about that opportunity as well. All right, who inspires you and why?
You know, I was going to say Michelle Obama, but and I really love her. But you know who really inspires me is that the people that go out to work every single day. So people inspire me. The people that keep this country running, the people that continue to push for change, the people that are working two or three jobs to hold it together. Those people are the people that really inspire me.
I think Michelle would probably answer the same. So I appreciate that transition there. And it makes this next one really hard, but a very meaningful question. So what one message would you send to Congress?
Money out of politics. Money out of politics. Things like reversal of the, I think it's Citizen United. We've got to get back to service-oriented politics rather than money-oriented.
Absolutely.
Oh, amen to that.
I know. We're like two hands, 2 feet in the air on that one.
Yeah.
All right, Lisa, in conclusion, if you were a food, what would you be?
Well, you'll like this one. I'd be a mushroom, and I think I'd be a chanterelle.
Ah, do tell.
Oh, I forge for chanterelles, and I don't know if y'all have ever forged for them, but they grow out of the soil or the earth, just like these golden trumpets, and they have this really beautiful fruity smell when you forge them and cut them, and they're just delicious. They're just
absolutely
very beautiful.
They're like one of our favorite things to lay our eyes on. I've had a couple of fortunate encounters, so I appreciate that. I wasn't sure if you also had any additional intel on their health value that I should know about. So if there's any new research or antioxidant properties, let me know. But I love that you're focused on the beauty and also just where they grow out of. That makes so much sense and so relatable to you. Lisa, thank you. It's like tearing us apart to end the conversation. So I have a feeling we'll reach out to have a subsequent conversation. But we are so grateful for everyone who's listening. You can learn more about Dr. Lisa Price in the show notes. We have her information, some research there. We'll also share her website. You'll also have a link there for Fullscript, which I had mentioned in our brief intermission advertisement there. And we want to say a thank you to them and to the Better Nutrition Program for enabling us to have this conversation today. And I would just like to say, coming out of this, you've given me a couple more action items to be extremely intentional about. And I'm really grateful that through this conversation, we're learning how we can create the healthcare system that we know that we need to have. So I really appreciate your time.
You're quite welcome. And thank you again. I feel very honored that you all have asked me, and I'll come back anytime you want to.
Thank you, ladies. Thank you, Dr. Price. Another great podcast, as always. They fly by. 50 minutes, it felt like 20. So much information, so much we can do, so much excitement for the future. And we're always striving to improve. We know there needs to be a lot to be done. But I tell you what, if anyone's going to get there, it's going to be us. So keep listening, keep learning. Let's keep pushing forward. Let's keep paving for change. Demanding change, demanding better standards in the health and wellness industry. And I'll tell you what, we're going to get there. Right. Looking forward to our next podcast. Until then, I'll see you next time.